This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You're listening to the Noble and Roosh Show, brought to you by Ball is Life and Dash Radio.
Welcome back to another episode of the Noble and Roosh Show, hosted by Ball is Life. I'm your host, Roosh Williams, with my co-host, Zach Noble. And today, y'all can't see him, but he's dressed like a Stone Cold pimp. We got Bismack Biyombo in the building from Miami, Florida. Bismack, how you feeling, baby?
I'm feeling great, man. I'm feeling blessed. Thank you for having me. Hope you're doing great, too.
Love having you here, man. You're our third Hornet now on the Ball is Life show. I've had Devontae Graham, Cody Zeller. What do you think about those guys?
I like Cody a lot. That's my guy. Devontae, not so much. You know, that's a little... The little kids don't listen. that's my little brother, man. He's sitting next to me in the locker room since he got drafted. So good kids always want to listen and learn, work hard. I love that kids, man.
Good stuff. So you're down in Miami right now.
Miami, you know, the weather is not doing us a favor. It's not allowing us to enjoy Miami. But, you know, can't complain, man. Things could be worse, so we're blessed. It's been raining, the past few days. I think because of the storm, you know, it's going to. But overall, you know, pretty good. We're blessed, man. We're alive. God is great.
So like I told you before we got on, I'm in Houston, and Houston's weather. Houston's basically like the cousin of Miami when it comes to weather. Humid, sticky.
That's very true.
You know what I mean? Storming, raining. Like today, it was pouring all morning, and then it stopped. Now it's sunny. Makes no sense.
I always say the weather is bipolar here.
Yes.
I'd much rather be in Florida during the summer though than Texas. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I enjoy you know the heat and stuff just to work out. I think it's great, man. For the joints, the muscle, it's fantastic. I enjoy.
You got to enjoy the beach too, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yes. I go to the beach running in the morning and riding a bike. I think those are fun. I enjoy that in the morning before the sun come up. So, you know, the beach is quiet, less people. It's fun.
Heck yeah. Is Miami the summer spot for you the last couple of years or this new to you?
You know, I moved my family down here because, we used to live in L.A. We lived in L.A. for about 7 to 8 years. And then I think during COVID, you know, the whole family wanted some change. You know, when I played in Orlando, they all love Florida. So I was just trying to find something that was convenient and easy to get home. So that's kind of how we found a love of Miami. Then move everybody down here. So I'm down here with my brothers and sisters, and hopefully soon we'll have my mom and dad come and visit us.
Awesome. You know, Biz, I live in LA. I mean, obviously I'm in Houston right now because I'm from Houston, but I live in LA. What do you think about living in LA? It's a little tough. I think it's tough.
I loved it at first, but then you get overwhelmed with LA, you know, because you kind of looking for like certain type of culture and everybody's somebody in LA. You know what I mean? So like
trying to be somebody.
They trying to be somebody. And sometimes it's like, yo, you ain't gotta tell me you somebody. If you're a normal person, I'm still gonna want to talk. You know what I mean? So it got to that point. And plus, you know, you got TMZ about all over the place. So I'm not sure there's a place you can go. You just have a peace of mind.
Bismack Biyombo eating the chicken sandwich, bing, bing, bing,
yeah, pretty much. So it's like, yo, man, you know what? I'm just going to stay home. But again, I think for me, I just got overwhelmed. And then, you know, you get to a point in life where you just want to find some stability somewhere where family can be comfortable. You can be comfortable. You know, I could relate to home here because it's very culture, you know. I always go back, you know, between like LaMelo and I always talk about this. He's like, oh, yeah, I love Miami too. But Cali, you at least got to go visit Cali every once in a while. So I'm still going to go visit LA. I love LA, but I don't think living in it, you know, is a place. So that's why I thought it was just too overwhelming. I still love LA, but it's overwhelming.
Yeah, man. So speaking of LaMelo, one of the youngest talents and most exciting guys to watch this past season. I'm really happy he won Rookie of the Year. I got to see LaMelo play live at the Drew League in LA. Mm-hmm. I think 2 years ago, two summers ago, 2019. And I remember, you know, when LaMelo came out and you know, started getting the attention from Chino Hills in high school, I remember thinking, you know, okay, this kid's talented, but I don't know. He was 6'2 at that time. And then he grew. He hit 6'7. Mm-hmm. He went to Lithuania, did all that. And then when I saw him live, I was like, okay, this kid's good. And this kid's going to be very good. And that was kind of my moment of you know, realization. And obviously he hit the NBA and, you know, was dazzling. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts, man, playing with LaMelo? Like, just beyond what happens on the court, he just seems like a high IQ kid, hard worker and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, first of all, you know, I think I got to give a lot of props to his parents. I mean, the job they have done educating that kid is beyond, you know, at least my expectation. Because when, you know, for kids like him and, you know, what the public, you know, put the image, when the public put the media put the image of the kids out there, you know, it's like, okay, the kids, you expect them to be cocky, that don't listen, you know, like I'm the real deal, you know. But when you're around the kid, you know, when I got to spend time with a lot with the kids, you know, it's like you know, it became like my little brother, and he is my little brother, but, you know, is humble, respectful, you know, wants to learn, ask questions, you know, all the unexpected. Because for me, when he got drafted, and I'm like, sure, I gotta go back to Charlotte, so let's see how this gonna turn out, right? But then when you walk in, and no, you know, I didn't expect that like, you know, our relationship was gonna develop that way. It's just that I'm a leader of the team. You know, I'm walking into the locker room. I guess, you know, when you gotta lead a team, you gotta, you know, whichever way this goes, go, but find a way to connect with everybody. And we connected more than I expected with him, more than with our other two rookies, which was supposed to be the opposite, right? So that's when at the beginning of the year, we used to play a lot, you know, like kind of grabbing and fighting. And I think we played his brother in New Orleans, and the video was circulating like, oh, you know, what's going on in the Hornets locker room? I think if you look it up, you can find it. And then we were sitting in the locker room laughing and say, you know, the media will say anything because they never know the truth. And I was actually playing with him after the game, and then come to realize like the camera was there. So I'm like, yo, we gotta stop because the camera is here. So by the time we all look at the camera, we had serious face on because the game was on ESPN or something. Yeah. So, you know, it's just the kids that I enjoy being around, man. You know, very humble kids, hard worker. And he's super talented, you know. It was unfortunate to see the injury happen. But I think, you know, as an athlete, that's part of the growth. You know, you get to grow, to go to those moments. Because that's what makes, you know, athletes, you know, especially NBA players, the greatest players, because they go to adversity, they're able to overcome, and then you have a story to tell to the next generation.
For sure. So you're incredibly young yet. You're freaking 28 years old. But in NBA years, I mean, you're 9 years in. I mean, you're a vet. You're as vet as they get.
Nah, man. I'm actually 10 years in. I just finished my 10th year. How crazy is that? Because I came in, you know, when I came in, you know, we didn't have these rules where it was like, you know, you had to go to college for a year and then get drafted. You know, I came from overseas. So people that came from overseas were allowed to come in the league early on. So, and then when I played in the Hoop Summit, you know, we were scheduled to be drafted like 2 years later, you know, because I wanted to go back to Europe and play. But then after the Hoop Summit, when I had the first triple-double in the Nike Hoop Summit history, then all the press conference questions was about NBA scouts and the NBA. So so we went from few years to let's just put the name now, let's get it over with, start get building the experience, the knowledge. So thankfully, early on in my career, you know, I had people that guide me, but the fact that I played professional before coming to the league, that helped me a lot, which is exactly what I was telling Melo. You know, the decision that his dad and his family took to send him to Europe to get that experience as a professional allowed him to transition quicker into the NBA more than the normal rookie.
That's great to hear. And so you were discovered, I mean, pretty well before the summit, right? I mean, when did you realize you thought you had a legit shot at making it in the NBA and being a high draft pick as you were?
Right. So when I got to Spain, I played my first year in Spain. I think by the end of the year, I was supposed to go home. And then I told my my parents, I think it was around Christmas. So I told my parents, like, we're going to have a 2 weeks break, but I cannot come home. And I'm not going to come home this summer. So I'm going to work all summer. Then when people take the break to go for Christmas, I'm going to stay and work. And I think around that time, that's when I'll start figuring out that, you know, I think I have a pretty good shot. Plus, back then, I was still playing in, like, the third division in Spain. So I'm like, if I can't make it to the first division, that would give me more exposure. And once I have more exposure, right now, like in Spain at the time, excuse me, it was hard for bigs to guard the small, right? And me, I was pretty good at it. So when I got a chance to get with the first division, the coach was like, well, we could switch 1-2-5. I'm like, this is perfect for me. You know, I could guard the smalls, you know? So that's when the coach was like, yo, I got to play more. I got to play more. And then the more exposure I was getting and the more attraction, you know, from NBA scout, then it changed the whole perspective. But I think it's probably in like at the beginning of my second year in Spain that I figured out that, I could do this.
So you mentioned his LaMelo's parents. I just wanted to make a comment real quick because we talked to LeVar. We had LeVar on the show back in, I think, October before the draft.
Yeah.
And, you know, people see him on TV and they all have opinions about X, Y, Z, whatever. And when we talked to him, it clicked for me. I realized like, yo, he knows exactly what he's doing.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like 100%, man.
Yeah. Do you interact with him?
I never talked to the father, but you know, the fact that he never been around, never came to Charlotte, you know, but the perspective that the media give you of anybody. And I think I've got to realize that it's not just players. Everybody has to deal with this. Right. So when you only focus on what the media is feeding you, you probably never get to know this person. But for me, just after spending time with this kid, I can only tell. And then the kid's telling him, you know, like the stories here and there of his dad. It's like, okay, you know, your dad's special, you know, other than what people talk about. I have a lot of respect just because of, you know, the way he raised the kids. And that's, you know, that's beyond, you know, at least my expectation.
You said you were ready at a young age. You were well prepared for the NBA when you came in at 19. I mean, who was mentoring you at that time?
So, before I got here, I played in Yemen for when I was 16. I played there for about I think it was about 6 months, which is one season. And then when I got to Spain, I had my ex-agent hire somebody that was kind of like big brother mentor. And then when I got to the league, so Boris Diaw at the time, I think it was, we were the Bobcats. And then, you know, my English wasn't as good. So Boris was helping me a lot. Plus, it's a lot of things that I wanted to learn about the league. So it was sharing constant information, right? It's about coaches, you know. And then one thing, you know, he used to say, and a lot of people in the environments in the locker room used to say, like, look, it's easier to make it to the NBA and it's harder to stay because you build a reputation, like how much people respect you. And if you get lucky to make it 10 years, then you know you're blessed, you know. So back then, and plus they were talking about the average years was like 3.5 years. So it's like, look, how can I learn as much as possible? So Boris was one of them. Eduardo Najera was another one. I think he retired that year because somebody elbowed him in the forehead, and then he had a fracture. The fracture his forehead. Yeah, and I was in a game. I was like, oh my God, this is real bad, man. So so he ended up retiring every now and then, still keep in touch. And then we had Matt Carroll, who was also another veteran on our team. And then I think they brought in at some point Corey Maggette. So we had some vet that actually came through. Sagana job was towards the end of his career. So we actually had some vet that, you know, that could at least teach me from their mistakes, you know, and then you could correct it, you know, rather than the work ethic, you know, how you take care of your body, you know, the game preparation, you know, the leadership aspect of the game, you know, how do you communicate, you know, with the coach, and how, you know, if you're in a leadership position, how do you now play the bridge between the players and the coaches and all that stuff, you know? So, excuse me. So, that's kind of how I went about it. But I took the first year really as a learning process because it was just Kemba and I as the youngest guy on the team. So, like, and we had the worst record in the league. So, and you have a desire to win, but here you are winning probably like 6 or 7 games and dealing with the worst record in the league. And now you got to go into summertime and find, you know, that, use that as a motivation to get better. So it was a rough year, but I think there's more good than bad just because of the environment we're in. And plus you had Michael there, and Michael was spending, you know, back then Michael was spending a lot of time with the team. He was constantly in the locker room, constantly during practice. You could talk to him after practices, you know, and the fact that it was always open to share information, acknowledge about certain things, you know, that was very helpful as well, actually.
Was there
I almost forgot about him.
Was there pressure? Do you feel pressure when you see him as a young guy in the locker room and you see MJ?
So I'm gonna tell you the truth, right? So I came for the draft. If he could speak for himself, he can. We were playing this 4-on-4 and 5-on-5. It was behind the baskets, and then he was talking shit. And I was talking shit to him. And at the time, he was sitting next to Paul Silas. So going back and forth, and I was playing and talking shit. And I always like to talk shit with Michael for some reason, right?
Why not?
So I don't know, man. It's just instinct, you know? And and that's kind of how, you know, our relationship grew, to be honest. But, you know, it was always open to that, you know? And then obviously when at the beginning is Michael, he come in the locker, you know, but then when it gets to the point where it become like a big brother. So now it's like, all right, man, Michael is here. Where is he? You know what I mean? So, I think our relationship grew to be something that I did not expect it. You know, I always consider him as a mentor, as a big brother.
That's amazing.
Just because, you know, I could trust him with asking him about any questions. And if he's within a reach to help me with something, he always does. So, you know, I love Michael. So,
hey, you did something right. He brought you back.
That's the thing. You know, it's strange when Michael reached out and then, you know, like this old thing. So I was like, you know what? Much excited to do this again. Let's figure out. But obviously this year we had enough talent, but you know, unfortunately the injuries and COVID is things that we cannot control. But you know, yeah, Michael's my guy, man. So
hey, this is the most exciting I can remember Charlotte Hornets basketball. I mean, I know y'all used to be the Bobcats.
Yeah.
This is the most exciting Charlotte basketball.
I agree.
To me, since Alonzo Mourning and you know, Grandma.
No question.
This year, no this question. Team, yeah.
Yeah,
this year, we had ourselves a lot of fun. You know, it was, you know, one thing that when you're around locker room, sometimes you find ego, right? But in our team this year, we had none of that. You know, guys supported each other. You know, if you play 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 35, 40 minutes, or if you don't play, so still supporting the next guy. And I think that's what played really a big role in our success this year. And plus, everybody just wanted to have fun, you know. I think it was it was one game in pregame, you know, we were doing this pregame stuff. You know, we always jumping and I end up slapping Terry Rozier in the head. And the video was circulating all over the place. So people were questioning whether or not our locker room was good. And some people were like, yeah, these guys are just having fun.
You smacked them a little too hard, right?
No, I did, man.
Not for you, but probably, for the fans.
Oh, man, I watch it probably like 15, 20 times, but every time I watch, I laugh. And then the next day, he actually rewinded it over and over himself and was laughing at himself. So I think for us, it was just, let's get together. Let's have the most fun. You know, the circumstances were not the best because of COVID. Obviously, you have to stay home, quarantine. You go to the game and come back home. But I think we got more out of this year, you know, on a personal level than we all expected. And that's fun.
Yeah. I mean, you had Gordon Hayward step up, who I think was a big addition to the team. Terry Rozier had a huge year.
Huge year, yes.
I think Miles Bridges was the best dunker in the league, like every other night.
In game, oh my God. In game, no question. The guy was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And plus, so, you know, he had LaMelo, who actually tore his lobs, which was like a perfect combination. If you're going to the game as a fan, you absolutely looking forward to some LaMelo lobs, which LaMelo forced everybody to get in a lot of shit because this kid catch the ball and take off. And then he's like, where you going, man? You know, he will catch the ball and it's out. So every time it was constant, you got to get up the floor, you got to run. And then
go for it.
No, I was just saying you got to make sure you protect him defensively. That's all.
I was going to say, is this the most you've had to run in throughout your whole career? This year with LaMelo? Oh, okay.
When I played with Kyle Lowry is the most I've had to run because, you know, Kyle is my brother. And when I played with Kyle, Corey and DeMar DeRozan, that was like a team where I had to do the most run because I was forced to cover a lot of them on the team.
Yep.
Versus now, obviously basketball has evolved. Nobody really runs to the basket. Everybody runs to the 3-point line. So it's kind of less running, but offensively for us, I think that was one of our main keys, just to be able to get up and down the floor. And I think having LaMelo kind of bring the joy of being, you know, of getting up and down the floor, like beating the other bigs down the floor, things that, you know, you do every once in a while. Now you look forward to it almost every game because, you know, the dude's going to throw the ball. So let's get up and down the floor, you know.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So, to that point, though, you just mentioned now people, the game spreads out, right? And everybody runs to the 3-point line. So I looked this up. You've shot 3 3-pointers in your NBA career. 3. Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask you, has it crossed your mind to step out and to start getting a 3-point shot, or does that just never cross your mind?
I'm not even going to lie to you. So I think before COVID happened, the coach was like, yeah, if you open out a 3, shoot it because of it. You know, during practice, you know, they have me practice it.
Yeah, I'm sure. In practice, right?
In practice. So this is what happened, actually. A practice before COVID happened, I went in practice. We were playing like 5-on-5. I made like 5-for-6. So all the coaches were like, oh, we're ready to shoot it in the game.
Let's go.
And then COVID hit. I was like, God damn you, COVID. So then fast forward earlier this season, the coach was like, we got to get back to that, you know. So, but as we were working, we barely had time to practice. So
you feel that pressure?
No, I don't feel the pressure, but okay. I think, you know, I think if I'm open, I'm definitely shooting it. So, and I think that happened this year once when I was clearly open and my man was all the way in the pen. I didn't care because if the coach give me a green light, I don't give it. Excuse my language, but I don't give a damn what anybody else say. I'm shooting it. So, but at the end of the day, for me, it's just that you have to play the right way, although there's a pressure. The ultimate goal is to win a game. Whether you shoot threes or not threes. Like, we could fall in love with the threes, but now the playoff gets here. How many bigs have shot these threes? We barely see all the big shooting threes because now the game reversed back to what it was normally, where the bigs got to play his role. So
because they're getting better.
Exactly.
Aiden's amazing.
That's my point. They grade, they're better, and then big start thinking different. They adjusting to today's game. So I think that's what we have. You know, we're seeing bigs having success, and it's fun and exciting. But like I said, I think, you know, all these threes, it's fun for the season, but when it gets to the playoff and when it's go time, the game reverses back. So we gotta go back to do what we do best in order for us to win these games, you know. Because still, if I could go get 10 offensive rebounds, that give us 10 extra position. And if we get out of the 10 position, we could hit 5 threes, that give us 15 points. So pretty much I can create 15 points of doing what I do to help the team win. So plus in the playoff, you know, everybody gotta play their role, you know. Somebody gotta rebound the ball, somebody gotta protect the paint. And somebody got to take more shots than everybody and play somewhat some defense, you know?
So speaking of that, I think that's why your career has lasted as long as it has, because you know your strengths and you just play to them. You don't try to do anything you don't think you can do or you that's probably out of your box.
No, man,
you know your role, but...
Yeah, it's nonsense because if you think about it, nonsense in a way of saying, why would I want to do something that's out of my, you know, like I have LaMelo.
Just not needed.
If I set 15 screens for him, he's either going to shoot the floater or he's going to get somebody open because somebody's going to have to come in and help. Or we're going to have a back door, somebody slide to the corner, get a corner kick. We're going to get something out of it, right? So now, if I'm popping, and then the other team is switching 1-5. We stuck. So it's like, I think for me, it's always, you always got to adjust with whoever you're playing. Understand these are my teammates. These are the strengths and weaknesses. This is how I can help them, and this is how they can help me. Because in return, like I think when I remember when I was in Toronto, Kyle would come to me and say, look, I'm going to get you probably 2-3 lobs this game, or 2-3 pocket pass in pick and roll, right? And then DeMar would be like, yeah, I think at the beginning of the game, I could get you like 2 passes. So that's 10 points. And then here and there, you get Corey, you throw your lob, that's 12 points. And then they'd be like, just get the offensive rebound. Don't fight to score. If you cannot score, just kick it out because I'll pass you the ball. You know, so you start thinking that way. And then they're like, now, defensively, we're going to need you to do this, this, and that. But we're going to reward you offensively. So now it takes all the pressure away from scoring. And plus, you know, but like I said, I think to me, when it gets to the playoffs, everything reverses. So you always shoot for that. You know, you always focus on that. When the playoff comes, how can we play? Because you cannot shoot. You cannot try to outshoot the other team. There's no way. Houston have tried for years. You never work.
It almost did. They got hurt.
Almost.
They got hurt.
Not the same as doing it.
But it was gonna work if Chris Paul. Biz, don't talk. If we talk about this, I could go all day.
Have you ever heard a team say, we almost win a championship? Either you did or you didn't.
Hey, speaking
true of... True or false?
That's true. But did they lose their second star going against four stars?
Almost never work, man. Either you do or don't.
Hey, but
I'll give you an example. So I give you an example. Trae Young went down yesterday. If Atlanta would have lost the game, should we say they almost... lost the game? They almost won the game? No, they lost the game, but they went and win the game. So, in my opinion, I agree with you. Injuries is something you cannot control, but at the same time, I haven't seen one team that tried to outshoot the other team and play no defense.
So, speaking of teams that kind of came up short, but, I mean, you lost to one of the greats. I mean, you lost to LeBron. That Toronto team was the best team you ever played on. Where does that rank? Was that the most fun you've ever had in a year? Or what team was the most fun you've ever played on, do you think?
I think that's the most fun, really, I've had since I've been in the league. I think this year was probably my other year where I just have fun being around the team. But I think that's the most fun because, one, we didn't have ego. And then, two, we wanted to see everybody succeed on that team, which was crazy. Where, you know, you have... Kyle, who comes to you constantly, like, look, I want to see everybody on this team get paid. Anybody that ever played with me, I want them to have to see them succeed and play and reach the biggest stage in their lives. And then, but we just love being around each other. And then it was just fun. You know, I know, like, if I made a mistake, somebody gonna cover for me. We never yell at each other. Never. Not once. We always talk to each other. I'll listen if you got to talk, and then you listen to me if I got to talk. But we never, like, try to bump head, except I know when I first got there, Kyle Lowry and I did not like each other so much. But then we turned out to become best friends because I did not like his approach. And, you know, I was in my own space. So it's like,
he pokes the bear, approach? Doesn't he?
No, because for me, like, that's what I'm saying. When you don't know somebody, but you get the perspective from the outside, it's different than if you spend time knowing somebody, right? So, like, Kyle and I, like, it was like, well, you do your thing, I do my thing, man. But then over the course of time in practice, you know, you got to either, you know, switch and guard him, or you on the floor, like, fourth quarter, I was always with him. So we find a way. I think at some point in the season, I can't remember, things just click, and then we just became like best friends. He's like family, and you know, and I love his kids. But the thing is, at the beginning, we were never that. It was just do your thing, I do my thing.
And to your point, you said Kyle Lowry was saying, "Yo, I want to get everybody paid." You got paid that summer after that season, right?
I know
that was your.
I saw him a while ago. It's like, we got to play again. So,
another contract.
When you say his approach, are you talking about like a Chris Paul type on the floor telling you go here, do this, that type of approach?
Nah, you know, when you play with somebody that understand the game and you know, when you move, they move. And then when they move, you move. It's like you don't have to tell them much. They ain't got to tell you much. You guys just moving, right?
Yeah.
Offensively, defensively, you guys just go and get it done, And then when it's like clutch time, you know, if I do this, it's going to get him this, you know, like if I got to get him a shot, this is why we got it. It was just natural chemistry. You know, you didn't have to force it. So to my point is, it's easier to play with him, with a guy like that. But I've seen Chris Paul, and I think I told my brother this. I said, people can hit, you know, might not like this guy, but I think the guy has proven a lot of people to be wrong, because look at Phoenix. Phoenix was not what they are today. And Chris Paul, they are almost the same team, but they signed a few guys and then bring in Chris Paul. And then the whole dynamic of the team changed. So in somehow, somewhere, the guy has something in him that people have to learn how to appreciate that. And to me, you know, I respect that. So it's the same with LeBron. Even when I wasn't, before we went in that Toronto series, I was always like, man, this guy, LeBron, this and that. But then when you face him in the actual playoffs, you see how much the guy think, the game preparation, you know, when he's on the floor, how he communicate with other guys, his poise, how it makes you pay for the little mistakes you make, you know, just reading the game. You know, like, I think at some point, they wanted to keep me in that series. They wanted to keep me away from the basket. So they had like three different plays. They run the first one back to back. We're like, okay, the third time we got to stop it. So then he brought in the second play. And we're like, okay, now we can stop it next time they run it. And then he went back to the third play. So now we can figure out to stop the third play. And then he came back to the second play. So now we're like, well, what they're running next? And then by the time they're running the next play, you're looking at the score like, shit, we're down 15. So, and then you go back, you watch film over and over and over. It's like, yo, we made a mistake here. You know, this is where you actually make sure we pay for it. So it changed also the way I watch film and the way I studied these games. And then
you're saying
so
LeBron? You're saying LeBron changed the way?
It made me change the way I watch film because his approach was just unique in that series. You know, like, I think I talked with Shannon Fry and somebody who we just having
Richard a conversation. Jefferson, maybe?
Richard Jefferson, yes. And we were just talking about that game. They were like, you know, the coach would come in and put a scout report, like, got to make sure Kyle Lowry is this, DeMar is this. Everybody like, nah, man, Bismack Biyombo is the problem. So the whole game plan was to keep me away from the basket so everybody can.
I mean, you got every damn rebound, basket. Man.
What I know.
They couldn't stop it.
But they figure out how to do it, and they do it so good that, and the guy was just, it's just brilliant. So at that point, that's when I realized, like, look, man, when somebody's great, you got to give them the flowers and respect the work they put in, because it takes a lot of hours of preparation for somebody to come into the game and have that kind of mindset where we're going to run this play. If they stop it, then we're going to go to three, and then we'll come back to two. Maybe we'll hit them with two again, you know. So just bouncing with three plays in the fourth quarter, that is very effective, and they find a way to make it work.
Yeah,
it's tough because usually coaches nowadays like, yo, this play work, run it until they stop it. Well, in the playoffs, you run it the first time, the second time, the third time we gotta be able to stop it.
Definitely.
So, but yeah,
I appreciate you going in depth with that. So a couple more, we'll get you out of here, but. After that fun year, I mean, you know what it's like playing on a up and coming team. You know what it's like playing on a veteran contending right. team. You know what it's like playing on the worst team. You've seen it all. I mean, you're 11 here, a big free agency coming for you. Where are you and Kyle Lowry going as a package deal this summer? I mean, what's an ideal situation for Vince?
I wish I knew, man.
Minnesota's calling, I think.
Yeah, man. I'm waiting for free agency. I don't know what he's gonna do. But
what are your goals, man? What are your goals?
No, I think for me, you know, at this point in my career, like you're just looking for stability and being able to, you know, to be in a mix of winning. And I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to go back to Charlotte because I thought we had that, right?
Yeah.
You know, if it wasn't for the injuries, I think we'd be competing for the playoffs. But, you know, life is what it is. You can't control it. But I think, that's going to why, you know, I enjoy the game. Being able to wake up and you have something to compete for, you know. Want to get in the playoffs, hopefully go compete for a championship. Otherwise, there's no point of playing basketball. You know, you're just playing for the money and all that. Sure. But I'm 10 years in, man. Just
Charlotte's towards the top of the list, then, or
so you know. Charlotte is always gonna be there. You know, I don't think you know I'm taking them off the list. You know,
okay.
Plus Michael's like my big brother, but at the same time, there's the business side of it. You know, there's free agency that's coming up. You always want to listen to what other teams have to say, and to be honest, even if I would have get to the point that I would leave, like the love between me and Michael would never change, you know. When I left, the love between me and him didn't change. And we actually got better, with, you know. And then when I came back, it was still the same, if not better. So I don't think that's going to change one way or another one. But I look forward to free agency. God will, you know, we'll be in a good position.
I was going to ask you, and then after this, I just want to ask you about your efforts in Congo before we get you out of here. But do you have like a story or any type of advice or any, just anything you can remember from, because you keep talking about Michael as your big brother.
Right.
Any type of advice or just anything he's given you that has stuck with you that you want to share, or a story where maybe y'all were talking shit, whatever.
No, man. I'm going to tell you a story. So one time when we were the Bobcats, I think that year I was struggling somewhat figuring out like the game and stuff, because I was just transitioning from Europe to the NBA. And then in Europe, you play one game a week, if not, maybe sometimes two. So it was after practice. He came to me. He said, I'm going to bet you $1,000 for 7 out of 10 free throws. So I looked at him. I said, what? $1,000 for what? Thank you. So I step on the line and I'm happy, I'm smiling. And then I start focusing. I was serious. I was not smiling no more when I start shooting them, right? So I made my first four. And then he was sitting down. So he got up, he's like, you know, put his hands in his pocket. He had some cash. And then I was like, yo, got the money right here too. I was like, oh shit, you weren't kidding. I said, no, I'm not kidding. The money's right here. So I think I missed the following one, make my fifth one. I know I made all the way up to six, and then I had, I believe, two shots left. All I had to do is make one.
You pulled a Giannis.
So, yeah. So he was like, no, stop shooting. So he grabbed the ball, and then he goes on, he talk, he give his speech, you know, and then, you know, my typical Michael talking shit, and then he tell everybody, was, yeah, you know, yelling. So everybody in the gym had to stop and they were watching, right? So he rolled the ball down, got the ball, missed the knife shot, and I had one shot to get to get a seven, to get $1,000. So I'm like, yeah, this should be cool. So he gave me the ball, took the ball, I was focused, shot it, and then I missed. I was like, damn, now I owe you $1,000, and my bank haven't even hit that higher of a number for me to give you the money, but I'll go to the bank. So then as I finished shooting that, it was laughing. I said, why are you laughing? He said, you see, that's an NBA game. I said, what makes you say that? He said, you know, when you step on the line, you play like you were playing for something, right? You were focused. You didn't accept distraction. You didn't accept none of that. It was just the game. This moment right here, right now. That's what I got. So that's the NBA game. You really got to focus on that and then let the rest take care of itself. And from that moment forward, it changed my approach to the game. You know, I was enjoying the game more. I was having fun. You know, my focus level raises, you know, attention to details, all these things. But yeah, that was, I don't know. I won't say it was funny, but it was more so educational for me, you know, and it shaped my career, you know. So, yeah. But
that's
yeah.
That's why he's my goat.
Jordan, so that, yeah. It was like, yeah, you don't owe me $1,000. I was like, thank God, I ain't got to go to the bank.
Well, thanks for sharing that. So look, before we get you out of here, man, can you talk about, there was a devastating volcano, I believe, in your home country. And, you know, just your efforts to try and help out and what's going on there. I think a bunch of people, I think thousands of people have had to evacuate. And it seems so devastating.
So we had a volcano erupt. Obviously, the foundry was being pulled away from the city. And there were no, they had no awareness that the volcano was going to erupt. You know, it caught everybody off guard. So as the volcano erupts, so they were forced to evacuate. So I think now we reach almost 1 million people after they did the count. So almost 1 million people are homeless. You know, wow. The volcano I've, you know, pretty much erased the houses, local businesses, and I think some schools have been destroyed. So thankfully, the school that we have in that city was not damaged, you know, but we use it as a shelter, you know, for people that was in need, you know, also as a center of distribution for whatever was needed. So pretty much like right now, a lot of people are, you know, we're dealing with food problem, housing problem. You know, a lot of kids have been separated from their families, pretty much homeless. So you can, you know, trying to share pictures all over the place and trying to make sure you can reconnect these kids with their families. So that's kind of some of the things that we're dealing with since the volcano erupted. And obviously, the goal for me, especially in the position that I'm in, was just to say, how can we reach as many families as we can, reconnect as many kids as we can, try to build, rebuild some homes and figure a way to create some sustainable businesses that would allow these people to get back into the communities. So that's kind of what we're doing. We did a GoFundMe. I donated myself to the foundation, $100,000. And then we're trying to raise as much as we can. So we created the GoFundMe as something fun. And I always tell people, you know, a lot of people, the ones that are helping that I don't know, that I do know, they're now from Congo, you know, but somewhat, you know, the story of Congo impacted the world as well, because in some way we all connected. You know, I do things here in the U.S. not because I'm from here, because I feel connected, you know, to the people here. I can always relate, but. Yeah, so that's pretty much it. And to everybody that wants to help, you know, we have the link on, I think it's on my Twitter or my Instagram. They can always go there, learn more about this, and they could feel free to donate. But again, all the fund go to these families and kids. And we always invite people, whoever wants to come, you know, feel free. We show you my neighborhood, and then we take you to, you know, where we do most of our work. But this year, our focus is more so on the volcano, more than anything.
How often have you gotten back there?
You know, I haven't been back since COVID.
Okay.
Since COVID hit. So it's
Before
2019. So before COVID, I'm looking forward to go back home probably in the next couple of weeks. We're still trying to figure out because the cases have risen a little bit. Usually we do basketball camps for kids every summer, and then we give scholarships to the best kids who come here in the U.S. Yeah. And then, we build the schools locally. So the goal this year, I think, is just to focus more on the volcano and keeping everybody safe, because the virus, you know, we have not gotten this vaccine over there. And then you got to educate people on the vaccines. You can't force them to take it. So, but yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. And I appreciate it again. Thank you for the question and the platform to speak about this.
Absolutely. Hey, man,
thank you for sharing. We appreciate you. Thanks for coming on, man. Sorry to hear all that. That's crazy. Like he said, visit business Twitter or Instagram if you want to donate and try to help out there. But hey, thanks for coming on, man. I really enjoyed talking to you. Really enjoyed everything. When we put this out, we'll probably get this out next week. If you just retweet it, we would be very grateful for that. And
all good, man.
And yeah, man. Oh, last question, by the way. Did you look up to Dikembe Mutombo at all growing up? Because I think he's also from the Congo. Is that right?
Yeah. He's also from the Congo. You know, when I first, it's funny enough you asked that, because, you know, like Mutombo, Akeem Olajuwon, Manute Bol, all those guys that came before us, to us was almost an excitement to hear, to get to know about them, because they, you know, they came before us. They kind of show us that it was possible to do it, to go from Congo to the NBA. So I think, you know, around that time, if you're getting into basketball, you're looking at them, right? You look up to them. But obviously at the beginning, it dived more into health. And I was like, since he's already into health, let me dive into, you know, education and sport, right? But you always look up to, because of them now, you know, you have a lot of kids that come from Africa, you know.
Did you guys try to qualify for the Olympics at all, or?
Well, not this year, but I think the next Olympics, because like now we're starting to put the team together because we have more NBA players and more pro players from Congo that can actually compete. We can put a solid team. So that kind of become the focus. But yeah, Mutombo is, it's a big brother to me, and I love the guy, man. So I can only say so much great things about him, and especially what he has done for our people.
Ooh, man. Well, hey, Biz, thank you again. It's the Big Mac, Biz Mac, Big Biz, Biyombo. We appreciate you coming on, man. We look forward to doing it in the future, hopefully. And we'll be watching free agency. We're going to see where you go.
Bless, man. Appreciate it. God will, man.
Hey, enjoy that Miami summer, man. Take care.
Oh, I am going to enjoy it, guys.
Club will. All right,
brother. You have a good night.
Bless, man. Absent.